Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Monday, February 21st, 2011, as Yvonne and I record this. This is Sam Minter, and yes, indeed, I do have Yvonne Bo with us again. We're recording a few hours later than we've usually been recording lately, but, you know, that's cool. You know, Yvonne had something going on, and I like nighttime better anyway. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. So we went and did the thing and the thing.
Yeah, so we...
They actually do this test at the gym where they test to see what your aerobic performance is. And so they were doing that close to the usual time that we do that. And, you know, so I knew that I couldn't do that. So I actually did pretty good at the test. Okay. All right. So,
you know, I need to go and do that. Like, I don't know if anybody... You know, goes to my website, owlsmay.com, and clicks on the dashboard link. The first two things there are my percent body mass and my mass, percent body fat and my mass in general. And like the default view is 1 year, but you can click on and get a big picture and then switch to like 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 1 month, whatever. Anyway, the point is, like, if you go back 10 years, the general trend has been upward.
Yes.
You know?
that's a standard operating procedure, yes. Okay, yeah, yes.
But, you know,
okay.
But look, if you... If you only look at the last 2 years, though, you know, the basic pattern was, like, in the year or so before Alex was born... I was actually, I don't know what the fuck I was doing. Actually, I have some ideas, but I was dropping, you know, I was getting more fit. My body fat was going down. My weight was going down, the whole deal, I do know what I was doing. I was walking the dog a little bit more. I was, cutting.
Eating better?
Not necessarily better, but definitely less. I was eating
less.
I was making a point to sort of my actual methodology was only eat when somebody else suggested it. Never eat on my own volition, basically.
Very interesting.
So, like, if somebody at work would be like, "Hey, let's go have lunch," I'd have lunch. But if nobody bothered to mention it to me, then I would probably skip lunch. Although, actually, I had some exceptions. Like, if the food was free. You know, like if somebody had laid out snacks on a table or something, fair game.
Yeah, that definitely. Okay, that. Okay, gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
But you know, and I was doing that, and a big, big, huge part of it, I had pretty much cut out of the equation, or at least very much minimized. You know, sort of the big sugary like coffee house drinks. You know, like my standard.
Yeah, those are.
You know, and
those are killers.
I know. The thing you have to remember with one of those is you eat, one of them, you've eaten like a third of your daily calories. You know, with like
pretty
one,
much
if you get
yep,
like,
with
you
one know. With one of those. Yep.
Yeah. So like you basically, it's a meal. Like if you get like a 20-ounce white chocolate mocha at like Starbucks or your favorite coffee house, that's a meal by itself.
Yep.
You know, but anyway, so I'd cut way, way back on those because it was part of the only eat when like somebody offers type thing, you know, so I wouldn't just go and get one. But anyway, so like in the 9 months to a year before Alex was born, I was going down, 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 down. Then Alex was born, and not to blame any of this on him, I should say. But yeah, then for like the next like, you know, 9 months to a year, I went up, 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 up at almost exactly the same rate that I went down beforehand, you know? So it like on the graph, it looks like a V, and then I went higher and then I sort of stabilized. And so for the last like 9 months or so, I'd been completely flat until the beginning of this year, until the beginning of 2011. And now I'm going up again. And I'm like, okay, this is nuts. And I feel like crap. Back at the bottom point of that V, I was feeling pretty damn good. You know, I was getting a little bit of exercise. I'd lost some weight. I was feeling good about things. You know, and now it's like, you know, I'll walk up a flight of stairs and I'm like, oh shit, I need a nap.
Yeah. I will tell you that I had pretty consistently exercised really. I started a good regimen between 2000 and mid 2005, 06. And then I pretty much you know, sometime in 06, we moved and stuff happened, and I stopped exercising during that period. And I gained quite a lot of weight during that period. And so summer of 2009, it got to a point I said, fuck this. I got to, like, I had started sporadically exercising on and off between 06 and 09, but I hadn't gotten back on the same regimen, like, regimented as I was then. And I don't know, summer of 2009, I said, fuck it, I gotta get back on the on a groove. Okay, so I've started consistently exercising since then. But I will tell you one thing that really has made a big difference. From 06, 07, from 05 on, my back started hurting on a regular basis. Okay, it wouldn't go away. Okay, you know, I did stuff and whatever, sometimes it would go away, go back, but it was like bothering me a lot. Okay. Since I started in the summer of 09, my back pain is gone.
Mm.
Okay, like completely gone. I have not had another episode at all of extended back pain at all. Except when I hurt my back last summer lifting some cases onto a boat. But that's not the same thing. I mean, I just hurt it and, you know, it healed and it went back. But like my back pain's gone. And I just feel better overall in general. And I've been pretty consistent about it.
Well, you know, it does make a big difference. And, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where, like, yeah, I can feel right now. I can tell. I'm like, carrying around some extra weight. I can tell I'm not getting the exercise I need. I can tell all that. And I'm like, okay. Because basically, I mentioned it looked like a V and I started going back up again. But basically, all the things I said I was doing right in the time before that, I stopped doing. I wasn't walking the dog as much. I wasn't eating as well. I was eating out more often. I went, you know, I was back on the white chocolate mochas, you know, the whole thing.
Oh, boy.
And so, you know, it's like, and now I'm at the point, I'm like, okay, I got to do something about this again. You know, I got to start, like, and it's simple stuff. Like, the first time I did it, I didn't have a hard time doing it. I was just like, okay, I'm not going to have these white chocolate mochas anymore. And I was done, you know, and it lasted like, you know, 6, 9, 12 months. And, you know, I got to do it again. And I got to start walking all the dog, right, you know, all the things.
All right, so we got to get you back on the wagon. Okay, yep, all right. Yep. So basically, that's what I did. And the other thing I did today is that afterwards, well, my wife was off, so there is this weekend in South Florida, two big events are going on at the same time. We have the Miami International Boat Show, but I actually didn't go to that. One thing is, coincidentally, at the same time, they have the Coconut Grove Arts Festival at the same time going on, and my wife was off, so I wanted to take her to the arts festival. So I did. I took her down there, and so we did that, and we actually just got back.
On our rambling first segment, the first thing we were actually going to talk about is we got some feedback. Yay!
So let's go to the feedback.
Let's go to the feedback. So, this is feedback from our friend and longtime listener, Matt, who writes in to say, your Egypt discussions have been helpful. I was away that week and listened to the podcast on my way home and have it all summed up for me was great. So thanks. The conversation that was lost to your error sounded like it would have been cool to hear. I think that 10 minutes was lost about the shutting down of the web. And then he asks,
right.
And then yes, that is what it was about. In part, we started there, and then we talked about some other related stuff, and talked about internet censorship in general, and you know, laws that were being proposed in the U.S. that would give, and are still going around in Congress, by the way, to sort of set up an internet kill switch to allow that kind of power to the president in an emergency situation, quote unquote. Anyway, but we can't reproduce that. I'm sure those topics will come up again.
It was a fantastic discussion that we cannot recreate.
Yes. So anyway, Matt continues. Have you guys watched any Jeopardy this week with Watson? The humans got creamed in the beginning, but the last night at least, Ken Jennings put on a good fight. Possible podcast topic about your thoughts about AI and stuff. And then I'll note it was sent from his Verizon Wireless BlackBerry. So.
BlackBerry. All right. So, okay. I didn't watch the actual full episodes. IBM put together a summary of they did a thing where they combined interviews with the creators and designers of Watson together with, you know, how the game went on, and summarized it, you know, in pretty, you know, they did a pretty good summary of the points where, you know, how the, you know, where the human users were taking advantage and the other ones, and they showed certain things. I will say that, although quite interesting, I guess the one thing is, you know, look, it's a thing of like, what it showed is like the speed of a system that can go and like find information in a very quick manner.
Well, I think,
you know, but
the search.
No,
I didn't know
here
there was so much AI.
No. AI comes in with the interpreting the questions, because the whole thing with Jeopardy is the questions aren't straightforward. They involve puns.
Correct.
They involve, you know, sort of, first of all, the whole flipping of the question and answer. They involve, like, wordplay. There's a whole bunch of stuff going in there that's more than just, you know, a Google search for, you know, who is the author of some book, you know.
Correct.
You know, so that's where the AI comes in. There's the lookup of the information and stuff, but it's it's actually trying to make those qualitative judgments that that sort of, first of all, interpret the question, figure out what you're really trying to go for, and then sift through all the information, not just for a bunch of relevant sources, but here's the answer. And so it was
truly impressive. I mean, I will tell you. I mean, it was. I mean, I was looking at it. I mean, it is quite impressive how the system was able to, you know, take certain questions. Now, it did fail in certain questions, obviously, but so did.
There were certain categories that, like, they were not on the table. That, you know, like, you know, regular Jeopardy at this point has like audio and video bits. They have. There are some other categories that, you know, Watson may not have done as well at that I think they excluded. But,
however, I will say one thing, that in the end, Watson won a little bit in the end due to a little bit of luck as well.
Uh-huh.
Because it happened to be that in the last segment, Watson wound up getting a daily double.
Yeah.
And if the daily double had probably come into one of the humans, he probably had a very good shot at winning, but it happened that Watson was the one that landed on the daily double.
Hey, well, Jeopardy's a game that includes an element of luck. It includes an element of physical skill, hitting the buzzer as well. You know,
hitting the buzzer as well, and you could see how in certain times, I mean, Watson was beating them to the buzzer. But
I've heard quotes from there's a blog, Omnivoracious, it's an Amazon blog actually, and one promoting books and crap, but one of the bloggers on there was like a 6 or 7 game Jeopardy champion last month, I think, so he added some commentary on this stuff. What was interesting, one of the things he mentioned is that at high levels of Jeopardy, it's almost, you know, like certainly like the Tournament of Champions and things like that, it's almost always the case that all three players up there know the answer, you know, and it's the question of how fast they can hit that buzzer, how fast they can answer all that, make and betting strategy on daily doubles, all of that stuff makes a huge difference. You know, so anyway, just to back up a little bit, my family does watch Jeopardy on a regular basis. We watch it during dinner, actually, almost every day. We do the TiVo thing. So real life, we're behind. We're watching TiVo episodes from like a month ago or whatever. But we made an exception this week and watched on the same night the Watson performances. I think my overall impression, you know, as yours is, this is somewhat impressive. It's cool that it can do this. There are some obvious deficiencies still there. In terms of AI, the term has evolved over the years in terms of what it means, mostly in terms of diminishing what it means. Like if you went back to like the 40s, 50s, 60s, and you had people talking about artificial intelligence, they really were talking about making a computer that could think the way humans do and could do passable.
They were thinking data.
Yeah, they're thinking data. Yes, exactly. They're thinking, you know, computers that can hold a conversation with you, that can actually, you know, go about life, and you know, and maybe they're housed in a robot, maybe they're not, but they can go around and they can interact with the real world in a way similar to or better than the way a human can, and really have sort of self-awareness and know what's going on and be able to do this. You know, over time, you know, if you talk to people in those decades, the thought was there over and over again that, hey, we're only like 20 years away from that. And then they found out it was fucking hard. And there's,
yes,
you know, and it wasn't just sort of magically going to come into place like that. And that, you know, actually recreating that level of things was a little bit further out than that. However, you know, I honestly do think we will get there. It's a question of how long it'll be. And then we look at very much more specific things like this question answering engine in Watson or earlier, like computers that play chess. Like, you know, we had a decade ago the first computer beating the world champion. I went in person to some of those matches. It was a lot of fun, by the way. But a laptop computer, an off-the-shelf laptop computer with good chess hardware can beat the world champion, you know?
Yes.
And in another 5-10 years, I'm sure, like, the handheld device you have in your pocket could beat the world champion. And that's, you know, that's the other thing. You know, I got an email from my mom about this Watson thing and, you know, asking what my thoughts on, and you know, and she was like, well, you know, but, the, you know, it's this huge room full of computers. And I'm like, well, yeah, but look. You know, and I looked up a couple places on the web to try to make sure I had sort of the time frames right. But, you know, the if you looked at the top supercomputers in existence, the kinds that did fill rooms from the early 1980s, at like 80 to 85, maybe, your iPhone is more powerful than that supercomputer that took up a whole room in the early 80s.
That's very correct.
You know, and
I mean, let's put it this way. Your iPhone has more storage. I remember I worked at a company where, you know, we had an IBM AS400, okay? 3 gigabytes of storage was the size of a fucking refrigerator, for Christ's sakes. I mean, your iPhone has like 10 times that storage, okay?
Yeah, and look, you know, and the time – and that progress has only been accelerating. So I made the prediction that, you know, given what Watson has done this week, in 5 years, you'll have that kind of power in a desktop machine to be able to replicate that functionality. And in 10 years, you'll be able to hold that in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and...
Well, even to some extent, I will tell you this, that even to some extent, it's a little bit amazing that I do, like right now, I'll give you something that I use on my iPhone. Google search, mm-hmm. the application, but it's got the Google voice search.
Yep.
Okay. I find it so incredibly amazing because I remember how voice recognition, even my car has voice recognition and it works okay, but it's not that great. I will say that, you know, my car's right now 5 years old. I go and I find it amazing how one day I was in my car, for example, and I had a little problem. I have like this computer system that the car has, and I went and I decided, let me just say it to the phone. Let me see if something pops up. And I hit the Google search and I said, all I said to the phone is how to reset an iDrive in a BMW. Boom.
There it was.
Just came up.
Yeah.
There it was. There it was. That's all I did. And I was like, fuck. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm like,
well, and I pointed out as well, like, that Watson was handicapped by also only being able to have the knowledge that it had on board. It wasn't connected to the internet. You know, in any real life application, this thing would be connected to the internet too, and would be able to search all of those other repositories of information out there as well. Plus, for that matter, go on and ask people. You know?
Right. Now, yeah. How fast would it get to be able to, you know, I mean, how fast it could do that right now in the first place? I mean, I don't know, but later in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've heard a few people use the phrase that right now we are living in the future. You know, it's because the progress moves so fast and you don't think about it every day. You don't think about the fact of, like, you know, what you can do today on an iPad, you know, it is like equivalent to the stuff people were absolutely dreaming about in science fiction terms in the 60s and were thinking about would be like hundreds of years in the future, you know?
Right.
Like the information at your fingertips, the being able to do, I mean, it's just, if you go back and we've hit this theme before, so we'll stop soon, but, you know, if you go back and talk to somebody from even 10 years ago, but certainly 20, 30, 40 years ago, and you show them, you know, things that millions of people just carry around with them and take completely for granted every day to day, they'd be gobsmacked, you know? Anyway.
All right.
So, okay. So okay. That's Watson. Impressed by Watson. Back to yes. regular Jeopardy now. But, you know, and soon you'll be able to have a Watson in your pocket. So that's my sure prediction. We'll but
soon.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a break. And then, wow, we went pretty long on that segment. We'll be back. I never mentioned the rest of the stuff we were going to talk about. We're going to talk about Wisconsin. We're going to talk about the federal budget. And of course, we're going to talk about the entire Middle East and more blowing up. And that'll probably fill the show. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back and we'll talk about Wisconsin. I figure I should like sing some On Wisconsin fight song or something, but I don't actually know one and I can't sing, so I won't.
Neither do I, so therefore I don't know where even.
So anyway, the first I started hearing about this Wisconsin stuff was honestly people like making jokes about like, you know, there are protesters in the square. What's going to happen? Blah, blah, blah. It's Iran. Oh, oops. Did I say Iran? I meant Wisconsin. You know.
Right.
But you know, I gather there's a dispute about the budget. The main point of which seems to be doing some union busting for the public sector unions. The Democrats, you know, actually, in order to avoid a vote and not give the ability to have a quorum for doing business in the state legislature, up and left the state and went to Illinois. And you know, the governor was threatening to have them arrested and dragged by force back into the legislature so they could vote. Meanwhile,
as far as I know, it's not legal, but I
believe it actually is, and it's legal on the federal level too for the Capitol Police to on the order of
well,
the chair.
Yeah, but I don't think
that.
He can go to another state.
No, they
to
can't
do so.
Another state, which is why they left. The state police have no jurisdiction
right.
outside of the state, which is why they left the state. If any one of them were
right.
still in Wisconsin, they could be picked up and brought back legally. Anyway,
right. But, in the state, that's correct. But he can't go to Illinois to pick them
no,
up.
No, he cannot go to Illinois. That's why they went there. And then there have been all kinds of protests, and he's been threatening to activate the National Guard if the protests get out of hand. Etc. So, Yvonne, what the fuck's going on here?
Well, the bottom line is that this guy is a fucking asshole. I mean, let me tell you something. I empathize with the things that the guy wants to do. He came in. There's a big budget deficit. He pretty much said that the way to cut it is that we need to do some adjustments to. The best way to approach it is to cut some pension benefits for public employees, which pension benefits for public employees over the last 30 years have gotten out of hand. One of the most parts is the same reason Social Security is with problems because retirement ages don't change. We promise defined benefits. People live longer. Healthcare has been getting more expensive. Therefore, it's gotten more expensive on the state. Okay, all in agreement with that. And so in order to cover the budget deficit, he wanted to do that. However, the fucking asshole, instead of just saying, well, okay, the public sector's got some unions. We need to do these things. Let's sit down and negotiate. Was, well, fuck them. I'm the governor. Fuck it. So I got a majority in the Senate, so fuck it. We're going to pass a law where we're going to completely eliminate all rights for public employees to have unions, and we're just going to eliminate those rights. The only thing that can negotiate is for salaries, so we're going to pass a law, fucking flatten right over them, and fucking cut back on all this shit the way I want to. And I'm just like, that ain't a fucking way of doing business. I mean, it's just, I mean, and the guy is surprised that everybody is in an uproar about it. I mean, and I'm like going, I mean, what kind of an asshole? This is in his first month in you know, as governor. And so, I don't know. I mean, honestly, if I were the Democratic senators, I fucking won't come back until the motherfucker changes his mind. And if it basically takes it, you know, to sit out for 2 months of fucking state, I fucking sit out however long it takes. Because obviously you can't do business with a guy that just decides that this is a fucking way to do business. That, I mean, that's my take, but I don't know.
I think the one phrase I've heard used before, not necessarily for him, but that comes to mind here, is ham-fisted. It's, you know, look, I am not a fan of public sector unions. I am not a fan of unions. I think for the most part, yes, so there have been good results in some cases, and yes, they're responsible for things like the 5-day work week and the 40-hour work week, and you know, some things that we could arguably say are pretty good. But for the most part, I don't like unions. However, it seems like whatever this guy did, the way he's handled it has certainly not been such that A, he's likely to actually get the results he really wants, and B, he's burning any sort of goodwill to get anything else done on anything too. So it seems very clumsy.
Yeah, but here's the one thing. Maybe I don't agree with the total overall union agenda and some other things. But let's face it, we're a fucking democratic country, for crying out loud. There are people that over 100 years fought for people for the right to unionize and be able to have collective bargaining. It is one of the pillars of a fucking democracy, for Christ's sake.
Well, you know,
it is one of the things that a whole bunch of autocratic countries right now, of all the fucking protests we'll talk about later, is shit that these people, rights that these people are fighting for.
No, agreed. Because they don't have the right to
do this. And I'm just like,
just to clarify my own union thoughts, I think absolutely, everybody should have the right to organize however they see fit, and any company should have the right to enter into an agreement if they so see fit, but it should be handled as sort of normal right to assembly, normal contractual law. There should not be additional, like, sort of state-sponsored elevation of the status of unions beyond that. So, like, you know, anyway, that and then state sector unions are a little bit different thing, because now it's the government deciding to negotiate with the union, not a private company. And so that's a little bit weirder too. But, you know, so the workers should have a right to organize. The company should have the absolute right to say, you know, that's nice that you've made a union, but we're not going to negotiate with you. And if you make it an issue, we'll close up shop and move somewhere else.
And that's what some companies do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I understand that. I mean, that's what some people do. But you know, but there are other companies that don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if the company chooses to work with the union
and are successful.
Yeah.
You know, think UPS.
Yeah.
Think FedEx. Think, for example, Southwest Airlines, for example, to give just a couple of examples of companies that have very large unions, but that successfully negotiated some stuff that makes sense to make it that it's a, you know, that the company and employees work together in a productive way. Even in Europe, for example, think, you know, most of the large German auto manufacturers are very heavily unionized. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of examples. I am not a fan of some guy just going and deciding to fucking, my opening negotiating position is, here, I'm sticking out my two middle fingers, fuck you, this is my opening negotiation, and you know what, you can shove it up your ass if you don't like it. And that's this guy's opening negotiating stance on this thing. And then he doesn't understand why everybody gets offended by it.
Well, not only that, as far as I can tell, he showed no sign of, you know, starting from that opening position and then negotiating towards a middle point. You know, he's just
right. No,
he's digging in his heels.
Correct.
And also, you know, one other thing I've seen mentioned in a number of places is, you know, they're mentioning the Wisconsin deficit and the number of, you know, how critical the budget crisis is. But apparently, the amount of the deficit is almost equal to an additional spending package that this governor approved.
And stated early. Like about 2 weeks, like 2-3 weeks ago, correct.
Right,
yes.
Where if that had not happened, there wouldn't be any crisis at all.
That's right, correct. Because
so
the Wisconsin deficit
so
was
where
not
was
that
he
big.
Thinking about this whole like crisis when he passed that sucker?
That's exactly
and apparently
right.
Apparently, that was a series of packages. I don't know. Do you know what that package was? I've heard it described
there
as
were
sort
a
of
series
a bunch
of tax cuts, and there were a series of tax cuts that he passed about 2 or 3 weeks ago that basically, for the most part, created this fucking deficit.
Right. And so, they were targeted tax cuts, giving benefits to certain industries and such, right?
Which is fine. Like I said, listen. I don't disagree with that, and I actually do not disagree with the logic that he says that that he needed that these pension cuts and other things needed to be reined in. I don't disagree with that. Okay, that's not the problem. The problem is you know, it's how he carried about to execute this. That's all, and it's just that, you know, doing it this way. I mean, it's just like you having a discussion with your wife about how to spend money at the house, and the way that you open the negotiation is, okay, honey, we need to cut our expenses by 20%. So you walk over to her purse, grab her wallet, pull out scissors, cut out her credit cards right in front of her face, and say, "Problem solved. Here we go." and your wife is like sitting there, like, "What the fuck?" Oh, and you don't understand why this. It's not really going to be
I can tell you, Yvonne, I don't know about your family, but in my family, that would not go over well.
Oh, yes, and neither in my household.
Okay.
But I'm like, I mean, it's okay. So anyway, so basically, the one thing I was going to mention in addition,
yeah.
It's just, you know, in Florida, we had a similar revolt by the House and Senate because governor, the new governor over here, I guess the new Republican governors think this is the way to do business because all they've been doing is pandering to the fucking Tea Party, which is, you know, and so the Florida governor went and there was like about $2.5 billion earmarked that were approved last year, approved by a Republican House and Senate and a governor to build a high-speed rail line between Tampa and Orlando, okay, which is money that came from the federal government, okay, and that actually a couple of private companies had agreed to that did the construction to actually cover any cost overruns. Governor Rick Scott arrived and just said, apart from a whole bunch of things that he'd been doing over the last couple of months, basically pissing everybody off, the same guys in Wisconsin, the guy said, "Screw you, I'm not taking the money, we're not building the rail line." And but in this case, the Republican Senate in Florida was so pissed off that they basically said, "You know what, screw you, we're passing a veto-proof majority to take this money, even though you saying no." And so this is how shit also started in Florida. There's going to be one hell of an interesting – but this hasn't gotten as much play because there isn't the, you know, 30,000 people protesting in Tallahassee right now for this damn thing. But by the way, almost everything this guy has started with has almost been in the same vein and with the same tone. So I will not be surprised that if you wait 6 months from now, to Florida is also going to be like this.
So
as Wisconsin –
I'll add one other thing and then we'll wrap up on this topic. I've heard a number of – as I've looked through you know, the commentary on this, from those on the left, there's a lot of hand-wringing and, oh my God, this is a disaster. They're trying to kill the unions. They're trying to eliminate the public sector unions. This is a horrible, horrible blah, blah, blah thing. Just as a bit of perspective – there are quite a few states right now that already ban public sector unions. So
that is true.
So, you know, while this may be a step backwards for Wisconsin, if you're in favor of those public sector unions, which, as I mentioned, I'm not sure I am. But if you are, it might be a step back in the state. It might be a worrying trend for elsewhere. But it's still not really a national level issue. It's still really a local or regional issue going on here. And I think to some degree, you know, for the folks outside of Wisconsin who are making a big deal of this as a sort of a national impact thing are perhaps somewhat overstating what's really going on here, even if the governor gets his way completely, which it looks like he's not going to. But, you know, we'll see.
Well, we'll see. So,
okay.
All right.
Let's take a break. It's time for your poem of the week. So enjoy your poem, and we'll be back after this talking a little bit about the federal budget, and then we'll end up with all the stuff going crazy out
everywhere.
Sort of everywhere. Okay, we'll be back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
It Could Happen to Anyone, or A Letter to the Boy, by L. Lamar Wilson. The man in the shack on the corner wants to kiss you. He remembers when you jump-roped better than most of the girls and prayed without manly pretense. Remembers how you mimicked the church mothers, knees and body bowed, laud, your general contrition for being broken and breakable still. You always was too pretty to be a boy. Come give me some sugar, he says, and reaches out to kiss you on your cheek. But his lips are thistles, his face a cavern of bones. It's World AIDS Day, and you are here to chronicle his free fall from engineer to blind man leading the myope, to fevers that flash on and off like a switch spooked by the god he calls great and merciful with a smile. Your mother says his songs tore up church services all over town like hurricanes had done old U.S. Road. Dogwood splayed, naked limbs convulsing, wrapped in holy water, like the saints slain by the spirits he conjured. You don't remember him, so busy kneeling at the altar of this you the mothers and sanctified brothers could praise, who loved shirts against skins more than Bible study, loved tackling the most buff skin on the field, who always held you on top of him long enough for you to feel him hardening against you. Hardening, gimme some skin, nigga, he'd say and grin as you pulled away, then reach to pull him to his feet. This man doesn't know the you who dreamed of kissing the lead tuba player, but who was too much of a punk or a saint or both to follow his leer from the dais to the bathroom stall. It could happen to anyone, he says, especially when you love somebody. Make sure you write that down. You don't. Too sentimental, you think, for a hard news story. So you dig for the grit, for the who branded him untouchable. He smiles, places one hand on his chest, gropes the table for yours. You using protection with these boys? His scaly palm grazes your keloid knuckles. I haven't, you know, yet, you mumble. Happy for once to be numb, glad you can't feel the heat.
For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And here we are. The federal budget is now going through its annual cycle. I'll start here, and then, Yvonne, you're probably way more educated than I am on this, so I'll let you run with it. But, we started the week with Obama releasing his budget. A lot of people who were sort of budget hawks were really upset about basically saying, you know, look, he's not actually addressing it at all. He's punting on this issue. He promised he'd take this seriously. He's not. And then I gather the Republicans released something too, and now we're going through Congress. Other people pointed out, if you were really going to try to do something serious about the deficit or the debt, you probably wouldn't do it as part of the budget cycle. You'd do it as a separate initiative later. But what's really going on here, and why should we care, Yvonne?
Well, one thing is, let me clarify one thing. I got one thing that we've got right now going on is that we never the Congress never passed the budget for 2011. Okay. It's one thing that we are operating on continuing resolutions right now, okay? Because they could never agree on a budget, okay? So one thing that's happening is that we're proposing a 2012 budget while 2011 really is in limbo right now, okay?
We've just been doing continuing resolutions, right? That basically continue
Correct.
The 2010 budget indefinitely until something happens.
Basically, okay? Basically. And, you know, so Obama proposes a 2012 budget that actually a lot of people were actually pretty upset. A lot of people on the left were very upset because there were a lot of cuts in the budget, but the cuts were to a lot of programs that people were like, there were social programs and other things and whatever and whatnot. There were big cuts actually in the budget in terms of the military that were being proposed. However, none of the big items, which the deficit commission identified.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
as the elephants in the closet were addressed.
Right.
Okay. Bottom line.
None of the items that were big enough that they would actually make a long term difference to our deficit or debt.
Correct. They were not really addressed. So that's why people were like, what the fuck? Okay. You know, it's with this budget. Now, it wasn't the budget busting budget, it wasn't the very terribly aggressive budget in terms of calling for certain things. But I guess it's an opening negotiating point. The Republicans have no proposal on the table. Now, however, what's happened in Congress right now is that a big Tea Party caucus has been going and like pushing right now. The Republicans said they wanted to put some budget cuts right now, especially since we're operating on continuing resolutions. Okay. The Republicans said that they wanted to propose. They proposed like $30 billion in cuts. The Tea Party has pushed up that number to $61 billion in terms of cuts that are happening in what's being spent this year right now. We're not talking about 2012. Hmm. Bottom line is that right now, that even the Republican leadership is saying those cuts are too aggressive. Okay, so there is a fight right now. And even like what happened is in between the Tea Partiers, the Republicans, basically this new 80 to 90 guys that came into the House, and the Democrats, and everybody is in a fucking corner right now.
You know, I wish the Tea Party would go ahead and actually become an independent third party. That it'd be so, the dynamics would be so much cooler. Anyway, go ahead.
I think it would be interesting. So right now, the one thing is that's happening right now is that in order for operations to be funded, there needs to be a continuing resolution passed by March 4th. Okay, if there isn't one passed in the next two weeks, absolutely yes, we're talking shutdown.
Which basically every the Republican leadership had basically come to the conclusion that, you know, that didn't work out so well in 94 or whenever it was. So let's not do that again. But
I don't know if they'll be able to avoid it because people are standing in a whole bunch of positions that are pretty stubborn right now. This new, you know, you've got an influx of 80 to 90 freshmen right now that don't give a fuck. And obviously don't have the collective memory that some of the older people that are in the party have about that fiasco in the mid-90s. And right now, I don't think they give a fuck.
Well, you know, part of the fiasco in the mid-90s, too, was Gingrich blinked. Like, he finally, after a few weeks, which, by the way, these were the few weeks the whole Lewinsky stuff happened. But, you know, anyway,
yes.
Aside. Yeah, you know, she was coming in and bringing pizza when the government was shut down. Anyway, the thing is, like, I remember thinking back then, like, you know, if the Republicans had really meant it, had wanted to show for sure that, hey, all these discretionary, you don't need a Department of Education, you don't need a Department of Energy, blah, 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 which was the mantra there, well, then leave them the fuck shut down. You know,
right.
See what happens. But after a few weeks, they're like, and they gave in.
They shut down fucking everything. I mean, right. I don't think even Social Security checks would go out kept going, that would have caused.
I mean, that's the whole thing. It was an all or nothing kind of thing, and So you think they're going to do it again? You think there'll be an actual shutdown?
I think we got. I would say that the odds are decent. I'd say I put 40% chance of a shutdown right now.
So now let me ask, do you think the Tea Partiers are going to be more intransigent than Newt was to the realities? And yeah, will they let it go on longer?
Based on the shit I'm seeing in Wisconsin and Florida and other places, I'm going to say that the answer is yes.
Okay. So we'll see what happens if people go without their Social Security and Medicare checks for a couple months.
Well, now the one thing is, I don't know. You know, you're talking about it's March 4th, okay? Yeah. So therefore, that will be right after Social Security checks get cut, okay, on the 3rd, okay, which is they get cut. So we got to see whether...
Or do you think they could do? Do you think they could do some sort of thing where they'll agree to a resolution that will extend certain parts of the government but not others?
Maybe so. Maybe. Because
then they could avoid that and sort of, you know, force a shutdown only of the parts they don't like. Of course, part of the problem with the Tea Party is there's not really an overwhelming agreement on which parts they don't like. You know,
that's like the people.
You know, marching with their banners of keep your government out of my Medicare, you know.
Right, that are on Medicare. But anyway, yeah, so I don't know. It could be, you know, it could be, but right now it's just that, you know, there's so much disagreement between everybody that I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it's going to be quite interesting. I'll tell you this. I mean, it's a little bit, you know, I think that back when this happened in 96, we were really expecting it, okay? You know, because especially the guy that was really driving it was the Speaker of the House, and he had everybody together.
Or 95. It was 95, wasn't it?
95. It was 95. But so he was driving
whenever.
It. But right now, I don't, you know, this is a little bit more fragmented than that. The House Speaker is not pushing for a shutdown.
Right.
It doesn't seem to be like it anyway.
Well,
he did not have enough control to keep it from happening.
Right.
So, you know, that's the problem. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, you know, we're ending almost every segment with a we'll see, and I think the next segment is probably going to end that way too, you know, when we're talking about the Middle East and such.
Me to make a prediction? You want me to make a prediction? Shit, I think we're going to have a shutdown in March.
How long?
I'll say 3 weeks.
Okay. You know, here's my bold prediction, and this is another bold prediction I'm pulling out of my ass, not really knowing anything, and just doing it to be different than Yvonne so that we have something to talk about. I will predict no shutdown. A deal will be made.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. I like it.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll be right back after this, and we will talk about everything, you know, Yvonne, we'll do it after the break. A whole bunch of countries are just having chaos break out. We'll be back after this to talk about that.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you, so this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, here we go. We're back. So let's see.
Did you ever see the movie? Did you ever see the movie Get Smart, you know, with Steve Carell?
No, I did not.
Ah, God. Well, there's a part in it where they go in the Situation Room, and the vice president supposedly is there, and the joint chiefs and whatever. And they start running down. So what are we going to discuss? There's a deteriorating situation in Iraq. There's a deteriorating situation in Libya. There's a deteriorating situation. He goes through a list of countries on and on. So – okay, we could talk about the deteriorating situation in Libya, the deteriorating situation in Bahrain, the deteriorating situation in Morocco, the deteriorating situation in Iran, the deteriorating situation in China. I don't know, any other countries I've missed right now?
Algeria.
Well, deteriorating situation in the U.S.,
Yemen.
Algeria. Yemen.
Yeah.
Right.
And
we already covered the U.S., where we're already just fucking, we got people on the square and protesting right now already.
Practically, you know, Jordan. I should add Jordan, Syria.
Jordan. Right. Syria.
You practically can't name a country in the Middle East that does not have something going on right now. And they're all responding to it a little bit differently. It's very much different situations in each country, but there's clearly, you know, sort of a pent up demand here, where, you know, there's, you know, all of a sudden people see, you know, turnover of power in both Tunisia and Egypt with limited to no bloodshed. And they're like,
right.
Well, shit, we don't like our government either. Let's give it a try. And, you know, and in many of these cases, you know, the one that's getting the most press lately is Libya, because Gaddafi's just right. taken none of this shit and he's mowing them down. He's bringing in helicopters. He's bringing in mercenaries and snipers from other countries. And so, you know, there have been reports of like hundreds of people killed in Libya. At protests, at funerals for people killed at the protests, you know, the whole shebang. Muammar Gaddafi's son was on TV apparently just not that many hours ago as we record this, basically giving a warning to the country that, you know, to paraphrase here, you know, if this shit continues, we're completely cracking down. You will see... You know, nothing really conciliatory at all. Basically saying, you know, we're not gonna take this, and if you continue this, there will be horrible consequences. He predicted the country breaking in half. Of course, he also predicted the Western nations invading and taking over. Blah blah blah, all kinds of stuff. But anyway, you see that going on. You've seen in Bahrain, there was initially, you know, a lot of bloodshed as the police came into the protests and started killing people. But then apparently the king was like, okay, enough, back off. And the police like backed off and let the protesters take back over. And so now we're sort of in a holding pattern again there. And like I said, we listed all these other countries, and then I saw something very vague about Côte d'Ivory, Ivory Coast, also having something yeah. going on. I didn't hear details. You mentioned as we were starting that you know, China's having you know, some thoughts about this, and of course
yes.
they had some experience, you know, a few decades ago with Tiananmen Square, and so they know what this kind of stuff is like too. So.
And they've been just, you know, there's been a lot of Twitter activity, people people getting together, doing stuff and whatever, and they've been super jumpy about it and getting all over it. There's been, like, the words, like, being thrown around in China, like the Jasmine Revolution and stuff. There was, they called it in Tunisia. There's been already internet blocking of certain words and shit and whatever because stuff has been getting, all of a sudden, getting play. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's certainly activity there that... We didn't see, you know, before any of this stuff started. I'm like,
well, you know, and one thing I've heard a couple people mention, you know, is that in terms of differences of approach, you know, in terms of if all of this stuff was happening on George W. Bush's watch, you know, what is sort of the there might all be all this kind of stuff about like, you know, told you we bring a democracy to Iraq and see what happens. You know, but, you know, you don't hear Obama saying, you know, hey, I made this speech in Cairo a couple years ago and I talked about how democracy was a good thing. And look, you know, you just don't see that kind of thing. And I think
I really don't think it's got anything to do with anything.
This is my point. One of the lessons here. Look, you know, whatever I think the main like. There's a whole thing about the neocons being all these democracy pushers and wanting to come in and they were really advocating for democracy across the region, and the whole thing in Iraq was to be the model democratic country that everybody else could emulate, blah, 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 blah. I think what they ended up showing more than anything else is, you know, democracy has to come from inside. You know, you
Correct.
Can't just go into a country like Iraq or Afghanistan and say, okay, have elections now, and then all of a sudden, you know, everything's happy and it's a Western-style liberal democracy. You know, it just does not. You can try to do that, but you end up with what you have in Iraq and Afghanistan, which is Iraq is still very fragmented. You know, the government is not able to really do very much because they can't get agreement between the main factions. In Afghanistan, you basically have, you know, a corrupt government being run by Karzai that is only in charge of the main cities anyway. You know, so you don't really have, you know, that kind of thing. Where you do get something that might perhaps be real is when you really have a bottom-up movement that says we're sick of the shit we've had and we want something different. And then we have yet to see in all of these countries what's going to end up coming of any of this. Even in Egypt, we have no idea where we're going to be in 6 months or a year, let alone all these places where right now there are battles in the street going on.
No, I totally agree. I mean, it's just... I mean, look, I mean, some stuff in some countries happen relatively quickly, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that another place is going to happen fast. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, and let me be clear. It would be awesome if we had the same sort of wave that as we had go through Eastern Europe in the late 80s, early 90s, some countries even as late as a few years ago, where we had long-term, you know, autocratic states overthrown and new democratic institutions coming in and really starting to take root. It hasn't worked everywhere, but there have been a lot of places, you know, in the former Eastern Bloc that have successfully made that transition. And it would be wonderful to see that spread to the Arab world. You know, I want to be optimistic here. And there's certainly a big movement going on there that has a lot of potential that, you know, for change, and maybe it'll be democratic change, maybe it won't be. And maybe in some of these countries, they want to overthrow the autocrat and put in something that is more like Iran and have a theocracy instead. I don't know. It's unclear in some of these cases what these people really want, but there's a lot of potential for, you know, the people coming in and really making, having some potential change. But as we've seen, you know, comparing already just Egypt versus Iran last year and Libya right now, the direction this goes does have a lot to do with how well the government decides, you know, what the mood in the government is. I think to a large degree, the military in Iran did not have the motivation to stand by Mubarak and say, you know, we're going to stop these protests dead, even if it means killing a few Egyptians, and we're going to keep Mubarak in power. They didn't have that motivation. In Iran, there was enough control there so that, you know, in the end, they cracked down on the demonstrators. Clearly, there's crackdowns going on in Libya, and we'll see what the different reactions there are. It really is too early to see, and it's changing by the hour, and the mind-blowing part of this is we've got situations like this that are changing by the hour that have massive potential for, on the one hand, you know, huge crackdowns, on the other hand, massive change. And it's happening in like a dozen countries and changing by the minute in all of them. So it's a very dynamic, very chaotic, very interesting time and very potentially hopeful. But, you know, every single one of these could turn into Tiananmen Square in 1989 as well.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and that's a big possibility, and everything could be over just as fast as it started. So, you know, it's you know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see, but it certainly
as I said,
that,
once again, we'll end the segment with we'll see. I mean, it's the only way to talk about this. You know, anybody who pretends to know what's going to happen here is full of shit. You know, that's the bottom line.
I mean, all the countries are going to are reacting very differently to these things, and all the countries have very different leadership. Okay, you know, it's like in Jordan, for example, the king is still very popular, even though people are upset about the government to a certain extent.
Well, and you know, you've had a couple of things here, like the king of Jordan dismissed his government, dismissed the cabinet and such, but isn't offering any actual changes to be more quote unquote democratic. The king is still in charge. Same kind of thing in Bahrain. He made some token moves towards eliminate some members of the government. But, you know, and Bahrain's interesting because initially when the protests first started, they were calling for a transition from a ruling monarchy to a constitutional monarchy, you know, like Britain has, where the king is there and he performs official functions but doesn't have the actual power. After the initial round of crackdowns, the protests changed to, you know, get rid of the king completely, you know? And, right. It's all moving. It's all moving. And, you know, we also had in Yemen, they dismissed the government to try to make some moves to try to make the protesters happy, which didn't appear to be enough. And so things continued. And then you've got Libya, where it's just like, you're protesting, we shoot you. You know?
Yeah, I know. So, anyways, all right. So, as we said before, we shall see. What happens? We are very clairvoyant.
Stay tuned. And I'll put in a plug again. I've watched it less this week than I have the week before. But, you know, if you really care to see what's going on in these places and get, like, more insight than you will by, like, flipping on CNN or something, seriously, check out Al Jazeera. They do a complete live stream of Al Jazeera English on their website, and there's an iPhone, iPad app as well, free, that you can just turn on, click, and boom, you've got Al Jazeera English, because it's only carried by, like, 2 cable companies in the entire U.S. You know, and, you know, as much like, you know, during the Iraq war, there was some stuff from the administration criticizing Al Jazeera for various things. I've watched enough of it to know that, you know, they're on the same caliber as like BBC for world news coverage in general. They're actually very good. And specifically when things are going on in the Middle East, they bring a level of regional expertise that just plain does not exist, certainly in the mass U.S. media, and I'd say not even on BBC. They bring a unique perspective to it that you just don't get elsewhere. Now, however, there's some downsides of that. They're based in Doha in Qatar, and Qatar is another fairly autocratic regime.
I've
heard different pronunciations anyway, and the crown prince of that country is the one who founded and pays for Al Jazeera. So it's actually very interesting what their coverage is so far, because they've seemed to be, you know, they're not like trying to cover this up in any way. They're not trying to put a pro authoritarian government spin on it. They're trying to be fairly neutral about it, but you can tell that to some degree they're very sympathetic with the protesters. So far, this stuff hasn't come to Qatar. If it does, it'll be very interesting to see what Al Jazeera does. But anyway, it just, like, if you care about this, check it out. It's worth getting the alternative perspective. They're not, you know, some of the propaganda, you know, in the middle of the Bush administration would have you think that they're nothing but a mouthpieces for Al-Qaeda. Nothing could be further from the truth. They are, of course, from a perspective that's very different than what you'll get on Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it gives you more insight into what's really going on. Anyway, that's it. That's our show. Thanks, everybody.
We're done.
Thanks,
We're
everybody,
out.
For tuning in. As usual, send me feedback, abelsmay@abelsmay.com, or post on my blog at abelsmay.com in the comments for the episode. Tell your friends to listen and tune in again. And that's it for us. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.